We are Netflix, the podcast for people who love Netflix and want to learn how we do what we do.
Is it a rule in the security side of things at Netflix to have people don't speak English as their first language? Is that like a necessity?
Yes.
It's a requirement before we hire you.
What languages do you speak?
I speak Romanian and English.
I've noticed. Which is good for me because I'm mono.
And I'm doing a half-hearted job at teaching myself Spanish.
I thought it was Chinese.
I gave up on Mandarin to learn even the basics, it was just astronomical for me. A tone-deaf person.
It's very hard as tone-deaf, definitely. Bertrand? How do you say your first name? Sorry.
At home, I say Bertrand.
Bertrand?
For the past 18 years in the Bay Area, I've said Bertrand.
Bertrand? I'll just mutate it every time I say it. What about you? What languages do you speak?
Well, I was born and raised in France, so French. English, obviously. I spent a bunch of time in Spain and Mexico, so Spanish is okay. It's very rusty by now, but that's about it.
Well, I'm doing a disservice, Michael.
JavaScript.
Nice.
Primarily my first language. And then I'm just a touch of English. Not enough to pass high school English, as my teacher wrote on all my papers. I was told I was the worst student she ever had.
You've brought this up before. I think there's some pain. Have you gone back there to complain to her? To tell her, hey, you know, I'm doing okay?
No.
Why not?
She didn't show up to our 10-year high school reunion. She was scared. I was the winner at that point.
Philip Pond has a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics and Computer Science from Ohio State University and a Master's in Computer Science with a focus in cryptography from Stanford University. He graduated in 2007. While finishing his master's, he worked at Apple as an intern focusing on fair play crypto. And after his internship, Philip worked at Apple as a crypto software engineer developer for 2 years. During his time at Apple and before and from school, Philip co-founded Good Game, a web-based project to process online event registration and credit card payments for student groups and university departments at Stanford. Philip left Apple in 2010 to join us here at Netflix, and over 8 years at Netflix. How have things changed in that 8 years?
I've grown a lot, personally and career-wise. I came in fairly green, I would say. Netflix gave me a great opportunity to pursue different interests and learn about different technologies and just really grow as an engineer.
Yeah.
So it's been fantastic. Every year has been better and better.
All right, so we have an add-in, your colleague. Do you want to introduce your colleague?
Sure. This is Bertrand. Take it away, Bertrand.
It's kind of a tall order to follow, but I was born and raised in France. I studied telecom engineering from 98 to 2002. In 2000, I had an opportunity to come to the Bay Area for a one-year internship, break year, if you will, during my studies. And I met love in California, and so in 2002, I came back, and I've been here since then. I went through a bunch of different companies, but I ended up in 2007 joining Apple, where I met Philip. 2 years into his tenure at Netflix, he was really trying to convince me to come join. And so in 2012, joined Netflix. And with a tiny pause in the middle that we can talk about at some point, I've been here for 6 years.
You took a break from here?
I took a break, yeah.
Why?
I was asked to leave.
Oh.
But then I came back.
And then you came back?
Yeah.
Talk about growing opportunity.
I know, right?
We're going to dive right into that. Here, you know, we're asked to leave if we're not filling the company's needs. So at some point, someone made that decision.
That's right.
What was that based around, and did you agree with it?
Well, so, yeah, yes and yes, right? So I joined in 2012 to run the iOS engineering team. And I think, in retrospect, I can say that I was not doing a very good job of that. And so after 18 months, my manager at the time decided that he needed to make a change, right? Uh-huh. Now, whether I agreed with it at the time, it's a difficult conversation. So I can't say that I was jumping for joy. In retrospect, it was definitely a good move.
It worked for you.
Yeah. And you know, it wasn't working. That there's no question there. I mean, if I think back about it, I took a year to go do something else. And it gave me an opportunity to think about what I like to do and what I didn't like to do. And what I did well and what I didn't do well. So I came back in an individual contributor role. And it's been going swimmingly since then.
So are you not looking into management then? You're like, I tried that, didn't work out for me?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's interesting though, because by the time I came back, the person who had asked me to leave was now my plus two, was my new hiring boss's boss.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But, you know, we had a very straightforward conversation and it made a lot of sense to him that I came back. It made a lot of sense to me and so it's been going well.
It's really hard to get into a place where you're not doing excellent at your job and are asked to leave and grow from that. I'm surprised you thought that it would make a lot of sense and feel good to come back. Was it a good decision to come back here?
It was a great decision to come back. it wasn't as thought out as you're making it out to be, sure. right? It was really a question of, I left. I went to do something else for a year. It was a startup. It was a failing startup. After a year, it was really time to go do something else. And there happened to be a good opportunity that matched my skills and my interests well. And it happened to be at the place I used to work at.
Yeah, yeah. Coincidentally, yeah.
Right. And then at that point, the good thing about Netflix is the past history did not matter.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, hey, I really want to go back to Netflix.
Did you feel any embarrassment or, I mean, did you see old people that knew the situation? And you're like, hey, I'm back, everybody.
No. Okay. I mean, yes, it was a, you know, it was that kind of a situation, right? But then you make a decision, right? Like, well, hey, I'm back on good terms. I'm back into doing it into something that I think I'm going to do well. So, hey, I'm back, right?
Yeah. Do you feel your previous experience and the relationship you had with the previous people impeded your progress, your initial progress when you came back?
No, I don't think so. The weirdest part was the interactions that ultimately I had to have with my successor, the guy who took over the position. And I have a great working relationship with now. At first, you know, it was a little weird because, you know, I'm in a security team, we have to, you know, with air quotes, come tell people what they need to do, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you need to do this. And so now I'm going to the guy who used to have my job. I'm like, hey, you need to do this thing. Like, what does it mean? Is it because I'm the security guy? Is it because I want my position back, right? Like, so I kind of had to dance a little bit around that.
He's a pretty excellent person to work with, so I'm sure that hasn't been that difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you do that a lot? Do you guys actually in the security go to teams and go, you know what, we're doing this wrong and we need to change?
I was saying that jokingly because it's been an ongoing point of debate within the team. No, we don't want to be the enforcer, mostly because that's not productive, right? Nobody likes to be told what to do.
Sure. If you're told what to do and you don't understand the rationale, then it's not as good an experience to do it.
That's right.
And if you understand the rationale, you don't need to be told to do it.
I think to your point, it really depends on the situation. And I think for us to be successful, we have to assess each situation kind of individually.
Mm-hmm.
If usually our normal stance, our default stance is of consultant, right? We're here to help you. And we come in with an open mind of trying to learn mm-hmm. what is at stake, what are the interests, what are the business goals, what are they trying to do, and then provide guidance, provide some boundaries for them to achieve those goals.
There's a lot of security groups at Netflix, and I know that there's teams that help me, you know, make sure that I've got two-part authentication on my system. You guys don't do that. There's a lot of space there. So can we focus down a little bit of what your group actually focuses on right now?
Streaming security. That's two words.
Making sure our files stay private, but also shared to everyone on the planet.
We wear a few hats, and at a very, very high level, yes, making sure of that. I think the way that we can define ourselves as distinguished from whole other security org is our focus is primarily on the devices, on the client side, right? Where most of the security, in the rest of the world too, most of the security teams would be application security, but for backend applications would be network security, would be IT security. We're focusing on content security. We've established that, but also device security. We work closely with our partners to make sure that their devices are robust enough against tampering of some kinds. You know, the way that the team evolved and the history of how things developed, we happen to also own the security protocol that we use for some of the communication between the client and the server.
Can you give me some names of those security protocols?
Sure. So the protocol itself, we call it MSL.
Yeah.
MSL, Message Security Layer.
Okay.
We've open sourced it. It's on GitHub. You know, in a way, we are the cookie guys who said, well, TLS is not good enough for us, so we're going to invent our own thing. It sounds not that great when you put it that way. We, of course, think that we had a really good reason that TLS was not meeting our needs, and that we needed to do our own thing.
Okay, let me just clarify. That's kind of a shocking thing to hear. But TLS is the backbone. If you ever go to a website that's secure, HTTPS, and you see the lock and the icon, all that, the protocol that does that, the handshaking that does that, is called TLS. It used to be called SSL, but it's actually TLS now. And so you're saying the entire internet uses this protocol,
right?
But we're going to do something better for us. Why would you?
Yeah. Right.
How'd we decide to make that?
And also, you know, Security 101 says never go invent your own protocol when you can use something established.
Well, unless you have expert cryptography people, which of course that's who you guys are, right? So why'd we do that? Why'd we go to MSL and not do TLS?
Do a little benefit. Pros and cons here.
TLS has enough variability that we, you know, there's ways to make it work, but it's really geared towards this asymmetric communication where you're some anonymous client, you're your web browser, some random Joe, right, at home, and you connect to somebody well-known. You connect to your bank, to Google, to something. And so there's an asymmetry there where, as a client, I want to know who I'm connecting to, but who I'm connecting to doesn't really care about who I am, right? And then that communication is secured. And this whole system relies on this fairly heavy-duty...
Handshaking.
The handshaking itself, but like the infrastructure around the determination of who you're connecting to,
mm-hmm.
right? The bank has...
That's a big piece of it, right? All these certificates that are signed to make sure that right, trust authority, exactly, all that whole thing.
The whole 709 PKI thing, right? That's really heavy duty. It comes with very high requirements. And it is asymmetric where in its default configuration, TLS will help you identify you, the client, you, the user, identify who you're connecting to, but not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
At Netflix, we own both ends. We own the back end, obviously, but we also own the Netflix app that runs on the clients, right? And we care to enforce that only Netflix clients connect to our back end and use the Netflix service.
By Netflix clients, do you mean Netflix-approved devices or logged-in users?
Netflix-approved devices. Okay. We care about the login user as well, obviously. Exactly, but even before that, we care about this needs to be a Netflix device. So we need to identify the client, and TLS doesn't help that well with that. There's ways that it helps. Now, there's mutual authentication, right? But then if we do the TLS way, then that means the client needs to carry its own certificate, and then that comes with heavy requirements about time management,
sure.
which embedded devices don't do well.
Okay, so once you've made that decision, I understand that sounds like a pretty intelligent decision thought out. I'm sure you have some experience here trying to do it all in TLS because missiles are a relatively new protocol. I mean, it's been around. It started since I got here 4 years ago or so.
Yeah, before we had missile, we had the NTBA. There's a high desire for flexibility.
Is NTBA our own protocol as well?
Netflix ticket-based authentication.
Okay, go on.
It was heavily influenced by Kerberos, Microsoft Kerberos. But yeah, we desire a high level of flexibility. We're on many, many thousands of SKUs of devices. And it's paramount for us to be able to cryptographically identify and authenticate each device because that tells us something about the platform security of that device. That tells us something about the level of security provided by that device,
mm-hmm.
which tells us something about what type of content we should authorize for that device. It gives us high assurance that, as an example, the Netflix application is less likely to be used as an attack vector to target specific users.
Meaning we're putting some software on people's TVs or
exactly.
on their DVD players, and technically the larger surface area, the more complicated that application is, the more risk we put their device at other attacks.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Yep. So we need to be careful about that. It's a big ownership role. Okay. So as we decrease the stack and understand the stack better, reducing it to something like a protocol of ourselves, we're not relying on something like OpenSSL, which how could that ever have a bug in it? Oh, wait, it does. so it allows us to have a safer environment for our customers.
That's completely right. And on several devices, we don't control that OpenSSL stack.
Right.
Actually, that whole HTTP, HTTPS, OpenSSL stack is provided by our device partner.
Right, the operating system, effectively. It has to be at some level.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was a painful experience for us at some level. I won't get into that, though. I do want to ask you, when we decide to say, we're not going to do TLS, and we had this older protocol, and we've learned from that, and we've learned from the Kerberos flow, and now we're going to produce this new thing called Missile. We got to develop a whole new way of ensuring all these things that you're talking about and replacing these technologies that are heavily proven over time. You have to invest a lot of software engineering time to make that work.
And we're still investing.
Hence you being on the podcast with us to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. We have three of our colleagues that are deeply invested in this. I mean, and they put many hours in still.
They're full-time on this now.
Yeah.
So we find that Missile, we came up with it because we had a need. We find that it fulfills the need. But there are challenges. And one of the challenges, TLS for other people, for you guys, is great because there's a ton of tools. If you need to, you can always go debug what you need because all the tooling is there because the rest of the world uses it, right? For Missile, we've been suffering a little bit about that because if there's going to be tooling, we need to develop the tooling.
Let's dive into that, for example, for just a second. So right now, I'm on the iOS platform and Michael's on TV and website platforms. Mm-hmm. And so we're developing all the time and we're getting a lot of data. Of course, we do get the streaming data, which comes through Missile. But we also have images and data like the title and synopsises of all the episodes and all the images for the episodes, the whole user interface. And all of that stuff also is going through TLS, right? Mm-hmm. And it's doing that because we're doing more standard systems. We're using Tomcat on our Groovy layer or Java layer. That's the web server that's running, and we're, of course, running in Apple's device, and we're using HTTP stack from there in. So to get really secured data, TLS makes a lot of sense. And we use this great little – I use this great little app called Charles, which is a proxy that allows me to put in certs into the proxy on my device, and I can all inspect that. I can create a man-in-the-middle attack for myself to help me develop the application. It's a very useful tool.
Charles is a great tool.
But that won't work with missiles, what you're saying. And so a developer that's doing streaming stuff can't use a tool out of the box like that from some other company. You've got to generate your own.
Right, exactly. Right. So we do have a proxy, I mean an injected proxy to dump out missile code. But of course, we had to come up with it. And, you know, as much – I mean, I love Charles. It is a great tool. It's very easy to use. I don't know that we had the same level of application know-how necessarily within the team to make a tool that's quite as nice to use, right?
It has a lot of features I never use. The truth is, right?
Right. You know, but conversely, whatever it is that we came up with, you know, is not that easy to use, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that is the crux of the problem. It is somewhat of a tough sell across the company because it also comes with higher bar in terms of usability, right? So I'm convinced myself that it is up to us to rise to the challenge, so to speak, and make sure that as we care to get missile adopted widely within Netflix, we need to give ourselves the means to do so, right? And
is that one of the hires that we are picking up, someone to build tools to make this easier, more adaptability?
Trying to pick someone up to join the missile team, you know, whose responsibility would be to do what, you know, that's open, but the team in general would be responsible to also do the tuning.
For a long time, we moved away from our own like physical hardware server rooms. We were in AWS. We do have physical hardware, though. We have these OpenConnect boxes. They're all over the place on the planet. And that's our own hardware that has our catalog. And this allows us to make really great relationships with smaller ISPs where they don't have to use output bandwidth. They can use bandwidth from inside their ISP to their customer base using one of our boxes. And we manage those boxes. And we traditionally, for our images and other static assets, we've put it on a large CDN by like Akamai, some public company that does that kind of work, or even on AWS's service of that layer. We've been moving slowly to our own boxes to do some of those assets because in some regions it's really beneficial for the customer. We can actually get better traffic throughput from our box that's local, you know, somewhere in India or something. When we do that, as we move to OpenConnect and we control the entire hardware stack and everything in there, are you saying that potentially we could move to all assets being delivered through missile instead of TLS because we control both sides of the conversation?
I would categorize the effort to gain that performance for missile slightly higher because the effort to optimize HTTPS has already been done. So now you're asking the teams, like, well, you have this thing that works and works fairly in an optimized way. Hey, come and do this other new thing. And by the way, you have all this effort that you need to put up to get the same optimization.
I'd never heard the idea of moving other resources besides the streaming feed to missile. So that was why I was curious about it. Just from been here a while and hadn't heard that idea.
There are many reasons, internal and external, as to why it also makes a lot of sense to keep assets and asset delivery over HTTPS.
When we're dealing with a partner, one of these large companies, I'm assuming that at this point there's a lot of desire to have Netflix on devices and such, right? So first start of a relationship with a company like that is at least starts as a, hey, this is a good business process for us, right? So by the time you guys are talking to engineers, those teams, they're kind of on board and solving the problem. So I'm assuming that you engage with people at these large corporations that are engineers like yourselves doing this. What is it like to do that? What's the relationship like?
It's great.
How so? Why?
It's super interesting because we get to foster this relationship with our colleagues at other companies, big companies like Samsung, LG, Sony, and all the SoC vendors, Realtek, MediaTek, Broadcom. Yeah, I'm name dropping, but it's like these big companies, right? And we're security consultants for these for these colleagues. We're trying to help them. We're trying to help them with their design. How do you design a robust platform security where the Netflix application can run in a manner where the user doesn't have to worry about being targeted with viruses, worms. They don't have to worry about the Netflix application being an attack vector for someone to display their choice of UI to extract
data
from their credit card information, right? Their account login information.
Your TV feels safer than your web browser.
Yeah, so, and we would like to say that we have a small part in generating that feeling from users.
So you, when users. You're working with a team, you're not just talking about like you have to do these things. You're also talking about maybe problems they might have with what they're implementing and how to potentially harden it.
That's right. Under the time constraints, right? Because everybody wants to ship a device, right? Everybody wants to ship a product. Time constraints and also business goals, which may be at times in direct conflict with security goals.
Yeah.
So then establishing the right trade-off between security risk and business reward becomes an interesting equation.
One thing I'm very curious about with security is due to how it impacts our customers. How does freedom and responsibility look like on the security team?
Lots of freedom, no responsibility. No, I'm kidding.
Because it sounds like it's just responsibility and more responsibility.
No, there's quite a bit of freedom because a problem has many types of solutions. And each solution reduces risk in different ways to different levels, security risk. So there is a lot of freedom for us to reach out to our counterparts at these big companies and engage in a frank conversation about, here's where your device is today. Here's the risks that we see with what you're doing right now. We understand your business goals. We understand our business goals. We also understand that we need to ship this like yesterday. What can we do? What can we do in the short term, in the midterm, and then what's our strategic bets to make sure that this risk that we have identified gets reduced. It gets reduced to a level where everybody feels comfortable.
When you're assessing that risk, do you guys mostly do this? Do you talk a lot amongst yourselves? How many is on your team? How many people are on your team?
There's 14 of us at the
14.
Moment.
14, okay.
Yeah. It's a big team.
That's a big team, yeah. So I'm assuming there's some separation of responsibilities and stuff, mm-hmm. like maybe if only a few of you are talking to LG or something like that. How do you assess best practices and make sure that all of you are kind of in alignment with?
I feel like that's the strength of the team because we do talk with each other. None of us know everything. It's just impossible. But we leverage each other's knowledge and experience to get to a really, well, the best state we can. So there's a lot of talk. There's a lot of conversations, at times heated, a lot of banging on the table. I'm not going to name anybody, Bertrand. At the end, we're attacking the problem, right? We're all focused on attacking the problem.
It's funny. You know, it sounds like so much of your job is not at a keyboard typing away code. It sounds like it's a lot of relationships.
Yes and no. So yes, the partner-facing job is one of our hats. And you can tell Philip wears that hat quite a bit and wears it very well. We have some time at the keyboard too. I'm more of that kind of of an engineer. And one of the reasons for that is while most of our clients are in the end done by third parties, by our OEM partners, some of our clients we ship ourselves. So the mobile apps and the Android TV app as well, the game console version of Netflix, we develop in-house and ship ourselves. The browser version of the player, we do ourselves, obviously. So for those platforms, on a technical level, the rubber hits the road, and we have to actually provide and develop and integrate a DRM solution.
Right.
And we have to do it in a way that is, you know, again, robust enough, that meets a bar that we find commonly agreeable, but within the constraints of not always being able to rely on the system itself to do it for us.
Can you talk about the roles that you guys do have open and kind of what you're looking for?
Can you, Philip?
Can you?
Well.
May you? I don't know what the proper.
At a super high level, we need a director. We need two managers.
Yeah, there you go.
And we need a bunch of
So it's just an IC playhouse right now.
Effectively.
We lost our director, but we need a replacement. We need somebody to take on that role and, you know, run the team for us, right? There are two manager positions open, one for our team, for the engineering team, one for the, we're talking about the missile engineering team. It's, you know, we're going to split it off. And we need somebody to run that, right? Yeah. We have, I think...
That's a neat opportunity because Missile's an open source project. It's rare that you get, you know, lots of people in the tech world like to work on open source projects from the public-facing aspect of it and like benefiting society and the world in general. And to have a company like Netflix back in the development of it's kind of a neat space to be in. So that's a pretty compelling space to work in.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the focus of the team, though, is on the integration of Missile within the Netflix ecosystem itself. So that touches less maybe on the open source part of it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is really like the core, like, okay, the basic system. But you know, when it comes to integrating, this is where most of the work has to be done. But nonetheless, and then we have at least one open position on the Missile team. We know that. And one on our team as well.
I think one on our team.
Oh, and one on the partner-facing team.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to go travel all over Asia and Europe and talk to, you know, all the big names as far as SoC manufacturing, and with all of the cable operators across the world, you know, please, and you want to talk to them about security, please, you know, go come consider
Let us know. Jobs.netflix.com, I think, is how it works.
And it's not just about talking to them, but having a direct positive influence into the devices that get built and shipped.
Yes. Do you travel a lot, Philip?
I used to, but now with two young kids at home, I try not to.
That's part of the freedom, right? You get to not travel as much now because of that. Yeah. Well, thank you both. Was there anything else you guys want to talk about regarding what you're doing and why it's interesting before we wrap it up?
I think there's one aspect that maybe we haven't cleared enough, and it's why do we exist in the first place, right? Because you could say, well, protein content, it only tells so much of the story. The way I like to think of our role is kind of like oiling the gears of business, right? Because at the core of what we do at Netflix in general is we distribute somebody else's content. I mean, we're starting to distribute a lot of our own content, but we started by distributing somebody else's content, right? When somebody else trusts us with their content, they come in with their own requirements. Hey, you really need to make sure that you're not going to lose track of this because, you know, otherwise that's less revenue to me. And we are committing in business terms to those content owners. Then we turn around and we work with, as we said, the device manufacturers, and we have to have the same conversation of, hey, look, we're on the hook for that content, but you're the ones where you know, the badness will happen. So we need to work commonly agreeable terms where you're going to be able to help us. And so that's the business aspect of it. We, of course, you know, support the technical aspect of it and help putting the whole picture together to make sure that we can all, that we have technical solutions that are, you know, available and suitable and appropriate for the problem at hand. But to me, for as long as I've been working on content protection solutions, what I've liked is that aspect of being at that intersection between technology and business. And that's something that's, you know, what you're saying, that the public sees maybe the technical part of it and the constraining part of it. But you also want to think about DRM as being the small necessary price to pay for all that content to be available in the first place.
Right.
It makes the business possible. So,
Philip, yeah.
Fully agree with what Batran described. And I would like to add one more dimension, and that is the user experience. When we think about security-related stuff, one of the functional requirements that's very dear to us is, how does that impact the user experience? And we take it as a mandatory functional requirement to preserve a good UX, right? To enable a good user experience. If instead we develop or design something that leads to a bad user experience, we've not done our job.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our conversations internally and externally starts with that, with the first bullet point being, how does this impact user experience?
It's a good way to align people's goals, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, it makes a lot of sense because we're in the business of delighting lots and lots of users.
Yeah.
And if you fail to do that, then, well, the security team, are not contributing to the company's goals.
All right. What are you guys watching right now? Philip, what have you been watching?
I just started a really dark series.
Is it called Dark?
No. I forgot the name. I just watched an episode last night, and I had some nightmares.
Altered Carbon.
No, I like that show.
Okay, well, I'll let you pull out your phone and look if you want.
Black Mirror. Last guess.
Could have been Black Mirror. That's a good guess, too. Sean, what have you been watching?
I'm catching up on the Hap and Leonard.
Happy what?
Hap and Leonard.
It's
two guys somewhere in this wet, hot south east of the U.S. having, you know,
conversations or
adventures.
Adventures. Oh, cool.
Grimy adventures.
All right.
I like it.
Michael, you got small kids, so you're probably watching a lot of kids.
No, yeah. Actually, we do very little television for the kids. But us adults, Lana and I, we do Westworld, which is an HBO show currently.
And
I
know. The new season's out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it's been very good.
Is the second season as good as the first one?
I don't know. I'm going through the first one now.
Okay.
But really what we're very, very excited for is the 3% coming up. So we're kind of counting down the days.
So you watched the first season of the 3%?
It was so good.
Oh, cool.
Holy cow.
Is that a Brazilian show?
It is a Brazilian. It's our first Brazilian
And do you watch it dubbed or subbed? Meaning, is there English speaking?
Subbed only. Subbed. I cannot do dubs.
So you read it all.
Reading doesn't bother me. I'm one of the, I guess, whatever that group of people is called, the people who have no problem reading.
I love this conversation of whether it's okay to read or hear a second actor.
There's a whole group. Lots of people would rather have it dubbed, and some people would rather have it subbed. It's very strong.
Turns out your Brazilian is much better than you thought. You don't even need to read. Well done.
Who?
Your Brazilian's actually Brazilians. Really good. You're just hearing it perfectly.
Yeah, you're like, I only speak English. No, you see. It's Brazilian, you're doing well.
Oh, wow. It's all fine.
The Alienist.
Oh, okay. I saw some previews for that.
It's dark.
Well, very cool. Thank you both for joining me on this. I feel like because we talked about dark shows, we seem to all be enjoying dark shows right now. Is there anything light and fun that's been Comedians in Cars is really fun for me. Anybody else?
I like the Santa Clarita Diet.
That's pretty dark too. It's about a zombie.
Yeah, it's about a.
But you're right. It's comedy.
I'm learning quite a few things about myself right now. I'm not sure if I like them.
The uplifting show, Santa Clarita Diet.
I think there's something about having young kids and being around them all the time that you need a little bit of escapism. That's right. Not that delicate,
And then once in a while, I go back to The Office and watch select.
Always fun to do
TV episodes because they're just able to capture uncomfortability.
Yeah.
How people feel uncomfortable.
Do you watch the British Office or the American Office?
Both.
Yeah, British Office puts a knife in there and it turns it slowly. Squirming. It's like,
Michael Scott is just so painful in some episodes. Him like crying on the floor in a company meeting. It's just like, oh, I can't do it.
I'm assuming that's very different than the office space here, right, than what we feel here at Netflix. But what's the best thing about working here?
Well, there's many things, but I would say my colleagues. I'm always pleasantly surprised. I'm always in awe for how talented and hardworking they are. And it really is great when you have a colleague that says, yes, I'll do that. And then it magically gets done.
It's nice to rely upon your colleagues.
It's amazing.
Thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
It was great.
Real pleasure.